Orleans, and that means it's Supernatural Substation time. I am your host, Eileen Postenio, and in the gallery with me is Bernadine LeBlanc. Say hello, Bernadine.
Hey, everybody.
And Pete Haviland.
How y'all doing tonight?
And the gang's all here, and it's torrentially raining where I am, so maybe that's why the gang is all here. So I don't know. We pulled a fast one. But anyway, we do have a guest. We invited back Mr. Brian Klum because he has a new book called, what is it, Ghosts and Hauntings of Alcatraz?
Or yes, it is.
Something like that. I know,
yeah,
it's about Alcatraz.
It just dropped a couple of days ago.
Yes. So, and we told him we'd have him back when he had that one out. So he'll be joining us in about a little over 15 minutes at 9:30. So how's everybody doing? We're working our way to Halloween. What's going on? What's going on?
Well, I'll be moving again.
What?
Yeah, next weekend I'll be moving again.
Oh, Jesus, burn.
So
what am I going to do?
Stay somewhere.
Permanent, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not. I'm not moving anywhere. In fact, I'm moving in. I'm going in deeper than an Alabama tick, as the saying goes. I'm just becoming more of a I don't want to bother with people type person. My misanthropy is taking over, finally. So you're moving again, but I'm putting up brick walls soon. And what are you doing, Pete? What's going on?
I've got an interview with the Houston Chronicle next week about my work. And I've had to turn down some media, unfortunately, due to some health concerns. But still working cases and still seeing clients, though.
Cool.
All solid this week, yeah.
Well, I saw on Facebook that you posted something about the Zora, the dog, the disabled dog.
Yeah, that broke my heart.
It broke my heart, and there's a lot of things I'd like to do to the perp, but I'd like to smack the woman too. You know, actually, you know, I said something about it on the post on Facebook, and I actually went back and took it down because, you know, I would flay him alive, roll him in salt, and feed him to the wolves, and that would be that, you know, with that. But that lady should not have had that dog in a car. The car locked and running and all that. So, you know, that was just like one of the other lowlights of the week. You know, I'm like, well, God, you know, a disabled dog, if that's not bad enough and you're going to kill the thing, you know.
He dumped the car in a pond.
Piece of shit.
I think the poor thing drowned.
Drowned because it had no use of its back legs. Okay.
Exactly.
There are, you know, people ask me all the time, why do they have demons? Why does God allow demons and devils and all? That's why, right there. What do you think's waiting for him on the other side? I mean, he's going to get chewed on. And I don't care if he goes to prison and he becomes born again and all that bullshit. He's still going to go right in front of the demons. I mean, that's why they're there, folks, because when you do ignorant and unrepentant and stupid stuff like that, and I can't even say his first name, and they need to quit making up these names, but he's Mr. Francois is going straight to Beelzebub, so he'll be smoked and whatever in the afterlife, you know. So
well, as far as you're talking about demons, you know that I think it was Nike that made some
the
ghost
shoes with the holy water in it.
With the holy water. They were charging like $1,600 a pair, and they sold out.
My goodness.
They sold out. Can you believe that? Oh, my God.
I wouldn't buy them because they had that blowout. Remember that guy in the basketball team? I don't remember what team it was. He had the big blowout and almost killed himself on the Nike shoes.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm going to pay that. How do I know that's real holy water, you know, and where'd it come from? And don't even start me on the Catholic Church right now. What church did it come from? You know, is it don't start me on the Catholic Church. I mean, I could lit up. I'm glad this is not a current event show, but let's talk about that for a minute. Okay. You know what happened? And y'all will probably have something to say about this. This week they had the Amazon Synod, okay, and they've been building up to this thing, and things are coming out of the Pope's mouth and his entire coven, you know, of ruinous, terrible cardinals and bishops that, you know, we need to worship Father, Mother, God, and, you know, the Amazon is a holy place. And we need to acknowledge that, as this idiot says, Pope Francis, that all religions are worshiping the same God, etc. So they've been working up to this thing, and they had this thing. And one of the rituals, okay, well, one of the things that happened is, here you got the heretic Pope sitting his ass right there, out in the gardens of the Vatican, okay? And they're going to plant a tree in honor of Gaia, the Mother Earth, right? And he's got these coven, these freaking satanic whatever is with him in these cardinal outfits. And then they had this little parade come in of these people, and they were in their indigenous costumes of T-shirts made in China and blue jeans, and they're coming in and shaking these little things and shaking the gourds, and they bring in these little statues of the pregnant deity, the pregnant mother deity, and they put those down, and it went on, and they would this and that, and worshiping the earth and all this other stuff right there in the Vatican garden. And they said, now we have to worship Gaia and Pachamama. We have to accept that they worship that, Pachamama. This has been a big joke between me and my daughter now. We pat my head, Pachamama. And apparently Pope Francis, all he had to say was, he stood up and said the Our Father in Latin, which he recently changed the words to, by the way. Okay. Then he went in and spent the rest of the day at the tomb of St. Peter. Now, the last time, listen.
How could a congregation allow that?
They don't know it. I mean, we could do a whole show on this, if you like. We could investigate this. They don't know it. I posted, there are people there on the ground reporting this. This church, since Vatican II, this is the completion of the path that it was put on in Vatican II, okay? He is a heretic, period. Francis is a heretic. You don't need to listen to him. He came out a couple of days ago, and did an interview with a guy who's like his bosom buddy and lifelong friend, who happens to be a socialist and an atheist, right? And he denied the divinity of Jesus Christ on earth. He said that Christ was God. Then when he became man on earth, he was man, and he stored up his divinity, and then he became God again when he was crucified on the cross. I mean, that right there is. It's heresy, and we don't have to listen to this Pope anymore. So if there's Catholics out there listening, you need to get back to the traditional Catholic. You need to go back to the pre-Vat church, because there's a possibility that everything this church has done since Vatican II has been invalid in the eyes of the catechism. This is causing a schism, Pete. I mean, it's Germany's erupting, you know, and in the Middle Ages, it's like we had two popes, okay? We had one at Avignon and one at Rome. And when popes got like this, those European kings got their armies, and they went there to Vatican City. They went to Rome, and they sieged it, and they pulled him out root and stem. And that's what needs to be done. You know, I don't care about world religions, etc. You can have your world religions. You can believe in demons and worship and whatever, you know, but this is the cancer inside of this faith. And this church, this faith, is essential to the life of this earth, okay? And these people don't understand it. But I don't want to have a heretic as a pope anymore. So that happened the beginning of the week. So, you know, it kind of eclipsed everything else except the Zach Bagans or the serial killer or something or other thing that I watched. So I wasn't really watching paranormal. I was watching this unfold, you know, over in the Holy City, you know? And it's just like, yeah, I just want to say, you don't have to follow this man, but the people in the church, I mean, I, you know, I could go into all of it being Catholic and explaining, you know, why we shouldn't be touching the host, why all of these things that have changed when we were in school, Bernadine, when we were in high school and everything. You remember the guitar masks and, you know, turning around the altar to face people, stop, you know, the kneeling rails taken out. You know, we did a show on Annalise, the possession.
Yes, we did.
Of Annalise, and I think I mentioned it briefly then, but the things the demon was saying at length were these things that had happened because of Vatican II, taking away the communion rails, turning the altar around. People don't have to kneel to take the body of Christ anymore. All of this is now given us priests, bishops and cardinals who write stuff like, we need to take our shoes off when we enter the Amazon because it is a holy place. Right? Screw you. Screw
they're
you.
They're making up rules as they go.
They have an agenda. They have a global agenda. A global agenda.
New world order.
It is. And he is a dupe. Yeah. He's a dupe for it. And he is a heretic. When he was elected, I don't know if anybody remembers, but while they would burn the smoke and all, you know, it'd come out black or gray or whatever.
Right.
While we were waiting, the seagull came and stood next to the pipe. First, he stood on the pipe, and he stayed there the whole day. And the seagulls are like bad omens to Romans, especially if they're seen with like snakes or a creature of the land in their mouth, right? So it was bad augury. Well, this thing sat there so long that the press in Italy gave it a name called fumo, which is smoke. So they had the little fumo sitting there the whole time. They were electing this guy. It was basically what they were doing was threatening everybody to vote for this guy. There are cardinals in hiding for their lives right now that are speaking out against him that he once killed. Okay. This is mafia style stuff. Mm-hmm. This is going on, but you don't hear that at Mass on Sunday. You don't hear that. You know, this is what's going on in the church. I posted something on my page, a report from Vatican City about this, and a friend of mine said bullshit, and he claims to be a devout Catholic, and I'm like, what do you mean bullshit? You know what I'm saying, or what he's saying, or what the Pope said. And this was when the Pope denied the divinity of Christ, right? And he said he never said that because that would be his resignation letter. I said, well you better take a look and educate yourself, because this is only the latest thing that he has done. So the crux of the church, the divinity of Christ incarnate to save mankind, he denied. Then he denied denying it, and then they made up all kind of other stuff, like, oh, you know, he didn't mean it that way. Right, okay. I mean, you're going to see something happen, even if you're not Catholic. You're going to see something happen that hasn't happened since medieval times. There's going to be a response to this, and the church could split. And if the politics in Italy go the way of the populism and the nationalism, and Salvini, who you'd have to look into, gets the government that he wants and gets back in power, he could very possibly pull that man out of that Vatican City, despite all of his guards, pull him out because he's a heretic, and strip him on the. I mean, it's going to be medieval, and there is people that are really, and cardinals that are thinking about, you know, in the form of schism. I mean, splitting from this man, splitting from the church under him. But there's all kind of calls for his resignation. He's, you know, he's either saying shit that people are telling him to say, or he's nuts. I mean, either way, or he knows what he's doing. And he did this like two Easters ago. He did something. He said some kind of offensive, shocking thing. And the ceiling in the basilica fell down, part of the ceiling. You know, I mean, if that was me, I'd say, well, I'm going to stop saying this stupid stuff like that. You know, the ceiling almost fell down on my head. But anyway, so that's what happened during my week. And it's like, again, it's another brick in the wall. it's just another brick in the wall. So Jesus, holy water, and Jesus Nikes, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And they'll fail you at the right minute. You'll put your foot down when you're exercising a demon, and it'll go squish, and all the water will come out. How do I know that's real holy water?
They were made by Nike. So, you know, it's on the internet. It's got to be true.
How do I know it's not Chinese sweat from all their sweat houses and workhouses?
It could be.
They're going soy sauce. Clear soy. How do I know?
Zach bought a whole bunch of Ghostbusters memorabilia now. I think he spent like a couple hundred thousand on it, and he claims that, you know, he's a real big fan. Yeah.
The question is, why is this man so rich? Okay, I mean, that's like, okay, he's buying all kind of shit. How did he get so damn rich?
I don't know.
What are they paying this guy?
I have no idea.
Bernadine, did you ever accept his friendship request on LinkedIn? Or was that a hack? Yeah, I mean,
I still haven't looked into it.
Yeah, honestly.
Well, his speaking engagements, I hear, they get like about between 10 and 12 grand for an appearance. You know, so yeah, he could be making money hand over fist.
He made a
merchandising.
Jason Hawes is coming back. Hawes, they haven't broadcast. Oh, you know what happened while
we were broadcasting tonight, I think.
It's tonight.
I think so.
Yeah, probably while we're on. You know what did happen? They did Salem Haunted Live, or because the Travel Channel's having in this full-on Halloween stuff.
Oh, and, yeah, they had the Ghost Brothers everybody, and all that stuff, and it was just a big act.
And look, I looked at it. I saw the Ghostbusters. The Ghost Brothers. I changed the channel. I have nothing against them. I think it was about damn time we had a black team that was funny. Okay, and then I look back and Chip Coffee's face. He looks like a freaking owl in the green infrared light. And I'm like, it's the same old, same old.
Oh yeah.
Salem is haunted. Period.
That's a no brainer. Anybody that's done any research, they know that place is haunted.
Honestly. I mean, you know, and people are tuning into this crap. And now the big daddy and his two members are coming back. It just had a mental picture of something. It's one thing with two other things, but I won't say what it is. But anyway, Jason Hawes and Gonsalves, Tattoo Man and Tango are back. So they got to be paying him mint. The only one who's not in the mix is Nick Groff. We ought to start a campaign with bumper stickers saying, "Where's Nick? Where's Nick?"
Nick got fired off of the shows.
I know, but you know, where's he? Can you imagine that it's possibly? And I'm not saying this that I know anything about it, but it's possibly because his ego was bigger than Zach Bagans, or that their egos were too big to be in the same room.
Maybe.
You know who's the smartest guy in the world? Aaron Goodwin, the other guy. The third guy and goes to bed. He does everything they want. No, he's like, you want me to go? Okay, I'm going to sit in this locker room by myself. He's laughing all the way to the bank. He is the smartest guy in the quote-unquote paranormal.
Yeah, he hardly says anything.
Right, and he's putting, look, in the bank. Yeah. I mean, he's like, I watched one where he got locked in an asylum room or something, and then forgot the key, and he had to go get the key. And so, you know, I mean, it's like that's entertainment. But he's the smartest guy out there. He's just like, I'll do anything. It doesn't matter. I'll sit in Skinwalker Cave. Yeah, you know, and he's money in the bank, you know. So yeah. So if you're a fan of all of this and you're watching the Travel Channel thing, there's some good stuff. They had like a Dead Files thing. I've been watching a lot of that just to see how it all is. You know, some of the previous, the older ones. Sorry, I did something with my with my computer screen here, folks. Nobody can see it, but I was like, how did that happen? I've been watching that, but I mean, the other stuff is like, you know, I turn it on. Anytime I turn anything on and see Chip Coffee, it's like, forget it. Yeah.
Funny.
Dunk. You know, I mean, Danny, you know, Bernadine's cousin is a better psychic than most of those people out there. And he didn't start with Miss Cleo. Damn,
like he's in the next room from us.
Yeah, he's a better psychic than a lot of them. That's why I say you guys should have your own show, you know.
We will be living together next week. Well, we're living together now.
Wait, that's like, what is the show? What are those shows, Pete, Big Brother and stuff? Can we come over and put cameras and watch y'all? I mean, it's probably.
I don't know. I don't know if we have a disclaimer that long.
Like look, I mean,
yeah,
like.
We're hilarious together, though.
Yeah. You know, the first thing that comes to my mind is you with your misophony and him scraping that fork on that plate going, I can hear that from another room.
You throwing knives at him.
I said, look, he better be on one end of the house. You better be on the other end of the house. Like, and
that's exactly how it will be.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I don't know. I don't know. Danny's going to have a streak of white in his hair, like like Lily Munster. And you're going to, oh my God. I don't know about bail money, Bernadine.
We're going to have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, you might get held on remand.
He already knows. He knows, you know. So, I mean, I guess he knows what he's getting into. But we chide on Bernadine every week. But I have to tell you something. Bernadine is the nicest, most generous person. If she's your friend, she's your friend. Okay? We laugh about it. because you let us joke about it. But if you need, you know, Bernadine is a great person. And, you know, so we kind of stick a little fun at some
unless
of her little.
She crossed me really bad and then I'll need bail money.
We happy. We keep a happy. Yeah. But if she, if you're on her list, you're on a list. She's got a bat with her name on it or something, a claws or.
In my car.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, girls got to be prepared. That's a five body vehicle that you have there. I mean, you know, girlfriend is Italian on what is it? Your mother's side?
Yes.
Father's side.
All right. Pete Bryan's in the queue. He came on. Our guest, Brian Clune, is here. Are you there, Brian?
I thought that was Scooby-Doo.
I'm here.
Scooby-Doo.
Son of
Hey, Pete, I've only got 11 down, so I got one more to go.
Oh, man. I fully expected you to have 12 down.
I was working on it.
Were you working on it? Okay.
Inside joke.
Okay.
All right, 11 down. Hmm.
11 down.
Consider what that'll be. Well, I'm sure it's okay. If it was Bernadine and I saying we got 11 down, it'd be something else entirely.
Mafia
back to the six body car that she has, and I can fit.
I would have to put myself on mute, so I wouldn't. Or y'all on mute, so I wouldn't have to know. The less I know, the better off I am.
If you knew, we'd have to kill you.
Yes.
Brian, welcome back.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
You like coming to this crazy insane asylum every now and then, huh?
I do. You guys are a lot of fun.
You get down. Get on it.
Thanks.
And besides, Pete threatened me. So, you know.
Yes, I did. Yes,
yeah, but you live in another time zone. So how much of a threat would that be? I'm coming to kill you, but I got to buy a ticket. And I got to do all this.
Yeah, it's like, Brian, I'm coming to kill you, but can you pick me up at the airport?
Yeah. Okay, I don't want to take an Uber because I might disappear into the, you know, whatever. So yeah. I'll take that.
Yeah, you know, the worst part about that, I'd be like, yeah, I'll be right there, Pete.
Yeah. 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 And I'll spend all weekend waiting on you.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, you would.
Waiting for the opportunity to arise, right? Mm.
So, yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can't get it with that criminal mind thing that we have going on. Speaking of which, wait, this book is about Alcatraz that you just came out. Haunted Alcatraz.
Yes, it did.
And we were talking a little bit about it, when we had you on the last time.
Yeah, when Bob and I were on, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's out now and it's widely available.
It is out. It is available. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it in any bookstore, pretty much wherever good books are sold.
Excellent.
So go get a copy.
Okay, so what is the exact title?
What about the bad books? Can we get them with their bad books?
Oh, you can, but they don't sell the bad books with my books.
You
can't get them as a package deal.
Well, they can only get my book with the bad books then.
They just put bad books around yours to make yours look better. You know that, so.
Oh, okay.
I do know that. Yeah.
You know, I kind of screwed up the title. So, what's the exact title of it? Haunted.
The exact title is Ghosts and Legends of Alcatraz.
There it is. Okay, I wanted to say Haunted Ghosts and Legends or Ghosts and Haunted Alcatraz. So, that's what it is. And you've talked a little bit about this, but it seems like you have a book's worth of experience, obviously. And I guess we just scratched the surface the last time.
I've got one question I want to ask you right off the top, if I can.
Just one.
Well, I'll have several, but just right. This is on the top of my
track,
head,
Pete, so.
Which is scary. Yeah, you posted this, so this is the reason why I'm asking, because it really intrigued me. You had mentioned that there was a tie between Alcatraz and cryptozoology.
Yes.
Ooh.
Okay. All right. Speak.
Speak. Dish.
Okay. So, the cryptozoologic creatures that have been associated with Alcatraz.
Right.
One of them, I'm not really sure whether it could be classified as a crypto, more of a legendary monster called the Buquus, which is sort of a, I guess a ghoul would be the best term for a Buquus. It's kind of like the ghost of a drowning victim who resembles Bigfoot in a way.
Okay.
But then tries to get people to eat what's called ghost food. And if they eat the ghost food, then they themselves become Buquus. If they do not eat the ghost food that the Buquus offers, then the Buquus will just try and drown them or kill them in some other way. So they're basically in thrall to the Buquus. So whether that's a cryptozoologic creature, a demon, I'm not really sure. I just sort of kind of, we lumped it in with crypto. However, there is the Matakagmi, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with that term, but the Matakagmi is basically a Sasquatch that the Miwok Indians and the Ohlone Indians believe inhabit Alcatraz. And where our Sasquatch beliefs kind of have Bigfoot as this scary creature, the Native Americans, at least in California, believe him to be almost a benevolent creature towards them.
Alcatraz is an island. I mean, how is it not seen?
Well, and that, you know, how is Bigfoot not seen on the mainland as well? I mean, we have.
Well, he's got a lot more room to move around on the mainland. I mean, Alcatraz is just a big circle kind
of. Right. Because he's a supernatural creature. That's why he can be seen when he wants to be seen.
Yeah, and I mean, we don't actually delve into that aspect. We wanted to just basically give the legends without going into too much depth. You know, we write for entertainment and a little bit of historical education.
We
don't like to delve too deeply into the scientific aspects and things like that. But there is a very strict belief by a lot of the Ohlone and Miwok Indians of the Matakagmi actually being on the island. Now, whether it's still there, that is something that might not be anymore. The last reported, I don't want to say sighting, but the last reported tale of the Matakagmi being on Alcatraz was back before the United States gained control of it.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. Well, I have a question then. What was there on that island before anything, you know, any of this? I mean, I don't know how big it is, because I've never been there, but I'm assuming that the earliest inhabitants knew something about it. So, I mean, what was there before, you know, when I don't know, I guess the Indians coming from, you know, Mongolia and Siberia got there.
It was actually a mountaintop.
Okay.
Really?
That was submerged.
Yeah, it was submerged. The Ohlone Native Americans have been there for as long as anyone can remember. They were there at the time of the Mongolians coming over the land bridge, as far as we know. And at one point, the Native Americans would actually hunt up and down the mountains there. And then when the Pacific Ocean encroached and it turned into San Francisco Bay, the Native Americans just sort of adapted. They moved. It became an island. And they basically, the only thing that was there after that was a bunch of bird poop.
So it's just trees and whatever, and nobody lived there.
Not really a whole lot of trees either. There is no natural water source. And it basically is, and now, even though the buildings and everything are still there and there's a lot of tourists, it is a bird sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always kind of been that since the Pacific encroached on it. The
right.
Ohlone actually believed once it became an island that evil spirits inhabited the island itself. And they would exile their criminals to the island.
Right.
They didn't unless somebody did something just so horrendous that they had to put them to death, they really weren't into capital punishment like that. So they would actually exile them to the island, and they would actually, row over there, put food for them every once in a while, because they didn't really want them to die. They figured that the evil spirits would eventually get them and turn them into evil spirits themselves, which may be where the myth of the Bukus came from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So the island has always kind of had this mystical aura to it since the time of the Ohlone Indians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then came the U.S. And what happened before the prison? Yeah.
Well, okay. Before that, the Spanish, they kind of, for quite a while, they knew about Northern California.
Okay.
But they concentrated mainly on Mexico and Southern California and kind of ignored Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the Russians and the British actually started to kind of encroach, they thought, okay, you know what, we need to solidify our control of California. So they sent their ships up and they started to colonize.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know about the mission system. And one of the ways that the Spanish always colonize, because they didn't have a very large population, what they would do is they would send their conquistadors and their priests, and they would try and convert the native population to their religion and their way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they started to do that with California, or Alta California, as they called it, but a lot of the natives didn't like what they were saying. Whether they did it on purpose or not, the Spanish had sort of a caste system with the priests being at the top, the Spanish soldiers being in the middle, and then the lower caste would be those that they were trying to convert. And they weren't treated all that well. So it got to the point where the Native Americans in California were trying to avoid the Spanish at all costs. Now, this just goes to show you just how frightened they were of the Spanish that they would actually go to Alcatraz and hide out on an island that they believed was inhabited by evil spirits. They actually believed that the Spanish were worse than the evil spirits that they had always feared on Alcatraz.
Mm-hmm.
Which I always thought was kind of odd in a way, that they were that afraid of the Spanish. So,
well,
after,
I guess it's rumors of wars, and conquest and stuff like that. I mean, it travels, the stories travel, and among wherever, outside of the conquered area, and that's always been the case where, the Romans were terrible to people who hadn't seen them yet, like that,
Yeah. Yeah, well, and the Spanish, for whatever reason, I don't believe that the priests themselves.
Somebody's breaking up.
Yeah, we're getting some feedback on.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that, but I was trying to power through it.
Okay, well, it sounds like it's okay now. Go ahead.
Okay. I forgot where I was. That's pretty sad.
The Spanish.
When the Spanish finally gave up California and Mexico won their independence, they just sort of ignored Northern California, and they really had nothing to do with Alcatraz whatsoever. Now, when the United States purchased California after winning the Mexican-American War, and a lot of people don't realize that we actually purchased California, Arizona, New Mexico, parts of Nevada for, I believe it was $15 million in the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, or Hidalgo Guadalupe. I can never remember.
Right. It's an important point that they sold it to us. That's very important. Because if you listen to what's peddled out there, we're the terrible Americans. We're white people who went and killed everybody. So that's good. Yeah, they saw the opportunity to make a buck off a bunch of land, so they sold it to us. That's good.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, when the United States took over California, they realized that San Francisco Bay needed to be protected. Because it was this great huge bay where they could, put their navy and just have it, as a protected area. So they came up with a triangle of fortifications. Either side of the San Francisco Inlet, which is where the Golden Gate Bridge is now,
right,
and then Alcatraz. So you had guns on Alcatraz, you had guns on either side of the inlet. So anybody that tried to sail through to attack the bay would pretty much be sunk. And that's how Alcatraz actually became a fortified area. Now, as the Civil War came into being, there was a need to confine Confederate prisoners, and one of the areas where they did that was Alcatraz. So they started to slowly build up a military prison system on the island.
Okay.
Then in the early 1900s, they realized that it wasn't necessary anymore, and they actually sold the prison, the island, and everything to the federal prisons, and that is when it became a federal prison.
Oh, okay. And that's when all the fun started.
Yeah, I mean, it had a reputation as a prison before the federal prison system. Mm-hmm. The island at one point was a military prison, and that's when the original cell house was built on top of the Citadel. But yeah, most of the fun came after it became a federal prison with Al Capone, Machine Gun Kelly, Alvin Karpis all moving in, and with all
escape Stroud and all that. Yeah.
It seems like it was making ghosts though for a long time. For centuries, it was just layer upon layer of tragedy and supernatural stuff, and just layering on top of each other. And then
the place memory out there is incredible.
Yeah, I think it kind of would have amped up with when they decided to use it as a prison, during the Civil War, and the conditions had to be terrible there. And I can see how it's got haunted, basically.
Believe it or not, the original prison was actually a holding cell that was just a square room of cement, not very large, and it would just cram people into this area. Have any of you guys ever been to Alcatraz?
Yeah, I have.
I haven't.
Okay. So, Pete, if you remember, as you were walking up from the docks, you come to a building that you have to walk through.
Correct.
That is the original, I don't want to say citadel, but area where the first line of defense for the island was. Now, at the very top of that building, you will see a room on either side of you, and it's just a square little room.
Right.
And the one, as you're going up on the left, had a gun in it, but the one on the right was just for soldiers. So they would have just a gang of soldiers in there. Mm-hmm. And if anybody reached that point, the soldiers would just charge out of that room and just start firing down the corridor. Okay. Underneath that room, or the sally mm-hmm. port, as it was called, okay. is the okay. original holding cell.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's the same size as that sally port. So that kind of gives you an idea of just how small Jesus. It was.
That wasn't big enough to put 10, 12 people in, if I remember.
Yeah, and they would literally cram it with prisoners.
Wow.
Now, at one point, there was a tuberculosis epidemic down in there.
Okay.
And they brought nurses from the mainland over to tend to the prisoners.
Okay.
Unfortunately, one of the nurses contracted the disease. They wouldn't let her leave, and they wouldn't let her actually even leave the room. And she ended up dying down there.
Oh, man.
The first night that we spent the night on Alcatraz, we went and investigated that area, and we actually have the nurse on EVP. And I mean, they're excellent Class A EVPs talking to us. And it was incredible. And at the time, we didn't know why we were getting the voice of a woman down there. And that's what led us to start doing the research to find out that, yes, there were nurses that and the one that passed away down there. So we figured that's probably who was speaking to us.
What did she say?
Well, we were doing a basic EVP session, and you just hear her say, "What?" Like she cannot believe that there's somebody there talking to her. Now, when we heard it, we were like, "Did you hear that?" And we actually went looking for a woman. You know, everybody else, you know, it was like, I don't know, probably 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night. And everybody else was up at the Citadel, and there wasn't anybody down there.
Okay.
And then a few minutes later, after we got back, we were trying to, you know, ask her who she was. Mm-hmm. And we just hear this, "Oh my God." Like, and again, it was like this total shock and disbelief that there was somebody down there trying to communicate with her. And unfortunately, we didn't get anything else after that. But then the following year, we got her again. We were setting up a video camera. Okay, I was setting up a video camera. Everybody else was cooling their heels over on one side of the room. And they were making fun of me, calling me Brian Buell.
Oh, gosh.
Well, heck, I would have done that.
Yeah, I know you would have.
Yeah.
And they just were, you know, "Hey, Brian Buell, hurry up with the camera.
That's
Come on, Brian
crazy.
Buell, hurry up with it." You know, and I'm over there just kind of shaking my head. And all of a sudden you hear this woman say, "Who's Brian?"
Oh, my
like that.
God.
And it was and it was the same woman. And, you know, I was just kind of like.
Poor thing had no clue.
Yeah, no clue whatsoever.
Even though she was dead, I mean, she could know everything if she wanted to. You know, she's
yeah,
like, "Who's Brian? Who's that?"
But yeah, I mean, yeah, and the reason I was relaying that story is because there really aren't any places on that island where you cannot find some sort of paranormal activity.
Wow.
And that's hard for me to say because I'm not one of those type of people that go around saying, "Oh yeah, that place is haunted. Oh yeah, that place is haunted. That place is haunted." Usually I'm like, "Nah, I don't know about that." Alcatraz, though, is one of the exceptions. That is one place that I will fully admit, yeah, it's haunted.
Wow.
And it's a lot of fun.
I don't know.
You're lucky they let you out of that place.
I know, but you know what? I escaped. So yes, there was an escape from Alcatraz.
Did you blow? did you make a float? Did you go? Wait!
Didn't you get locked in a closet there or something?
Yes.
That was when you were doing the Dead Files thing.
Yes.
Yeah,
I was hoping you wouldn't remember that.
No, I remembered it. And I wanted to ask you each time. Share that story again.
Okay. So Bob Davis, my co-author, he had his very first experience on Alcatraz when he was 13 years old. Now, he was contacted by the Dead Files about doing an episode specifically about Alcatraz. And I was lucky enough to be able to go along with them when they were doing the filming. Now, it was arranged that while Bob was filming on Alcatraz, that I'd be allowed to walk around and kind of investigate as long as I did not get in the way of the filming. Mm-hmm. So they were going to set it up. So I had a ranger accompany me around the island to areas that I wanted to investigate. So we get to the island. I think it was about maybe 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. And we get up to the top of the Citadel, and they tell me, okay, we have to take Bob to go get mic'd up, and we'll get your ranger for you, but why don't you come with us? And I was like, oh, okay. And they're like, yeah, we just have to put you somewhere to wait while we find your ranger. And I'm like, yeah, sure, not a problem. So we go through this one room, and the crew is set up with this just this great spread of food and drinks and things like that. And I'm thinking, oh, I wonder if I get some of that.
Sounds like our investigations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they walk me through that room and to this door, and they open the door and say, okay, wait right in here for a little while. I'm like, okay. So I go in, I barely get in, and the door shuts and I hear it lock. And I'm like, what the hell? And I'm looking around, and I'm in a room the size of a closet. And I'm kind of like,
lockdown. Hey, you're in lockdown at Alcatraz.
Yeah. And so I'm trying the door, and sure enough, they locked me in the room. And I'm kind of like, what the? So I figure, all right, well, I don't know why they locked me in, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, and I'll wait. And I wait about, I don't know, half an hour, 20 minutes. Nobody comes. So I knock on the door, and somebody comes to the door. They open the door. I said, yeah, I'm waiting for the ranger. I'm supposed to, be able to go about the island and do some investigating. And I try to walk out, and they stop me from walking out. And the guy goes, I'll see if I can get somebody for you. He shuts the door and locks it again. I'm kind of like, wait, what the?
No way. So about, that wouldn't be me. Yeah. No. I said, step aside. So, that's it. I'm claustrophobic. So
about 15 minutes later, the door opens and Bob comes in. They shut the door again and lock it. Now both Bob and I are locked in the room. And I'm looking at him going, I'm like, Bob, how are they treating you out there? He goes, oh, no, it's great. They tried to get me to lie and tell them that this happened to me and that happened to me. And he goes, yeah, I finally just told him, nope, if you want me to do that, I'm just walking out. So they let him just sort of do whatever, say whatever he wanted
so
to
they
say.
Locked him in the room with you.
Yeah, and then they locked him in the room with me. Maybe about 5 or 10 minutes after that, they come and they get Bob, and sure enough, they lock the door again. And now I'm in there in this little, room the size of a closet by myself again. I wait another half an hour. I knock on the door, and somebody comes to the door, and I say, I have to use the bathroom. And the guy goes, oh, let me go get somebody. And he tries to shut the door. I stuck my foot in there, and I said, no, I don't think so. I opened up the door, and I walked out, and they actually had to send a ranger to go and get me, who actually threatened to have me arrested. And I looked at him, and I said, go ahead, because I'll sue you for false imprisonment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just like,
well, yeah. They were trying to keep you away from the craft tables, which they were trying to do.
Probably, yeah.
Food stuff.
Oh, hey, you know what? It got better. It got better, though.
Yeah, I seem to recall you mentioning something about how much better it got.
during the reveal, J.J. Abrams had been filming a funky paranormal show called Alcatraz. I don't know if you guys remember. It was very short-lived. I think it only lasted one season. Mm. And they had kicked the Dead Files off of the island, so they couldn't do the reveal on the island like they wanted to. I still hate that term, reveal.
Mm.
So they picked some sort of weird bed and breakfast in San Mateo. Now, before we got there, they took us to this funky Mexican restaurant, and unfortunately, I ate there.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. we finally pull up to this bed and breakfast. I get out and I'm told, you can't come in. No one's allowed in the bed and breakfast other than the crew that's filming. And I'm like, okay, what the hell am I supposed to do? And they tell me, all right, well, we're going to leave the van here. Your computer's there, so you can just kick back in the van. It shouldn't take very long. And I'm just kind of like, all right, great. I go, I'm going to go take a walk because I need to work off this nasty food that you fed us. So I go for a walk. I come back. The van's gone. Where it went, I have no idea. All right.
What a trip.
But now the walk had caused the Mexican food to rush through my system. Okay. So now I have to use the restroom. We're in the middle of a residential neighborhood. So I walk toward the bed and breakfast and I am stopped. Nope, you're not allowed to go in there. I said, look, I have to use the restroom. Nope, you're not allowed to. They would not let me into bed and breakfast. So now I'm like going, okay, I need to find a restroom. I'm wandering around the neighborhood, cannot find a bathroom anywhere.
Did you find the answer to what a bear does in the woods?
I'm in a residential neighborhood. I'm not going to do that. I mean, I would have had to have gone on somebody's front lawn. So
you could have been a great Dane.
Yeah, I could have. So I start calling everybody in my phone list.
Yeah.
Get on Google. Find me a bathroom. And so finally, somebody finds me one like a mile and a half away. I finally get down there, and the guy says, oh, "I'm sorry, it's for customers only." I said, you have two choices. You can either give me the key or I'm going to leave a deposit. So he actually gave me the key.
How much was the deposit?
It would have been a large deposit, trust me.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Yeah. And this was all one TV show. I have not wanted to do a TV show since. And it's like, nope, not going to do it.
You just had your Mardi Gras experience, by the way.
Do I even want to know?
Ain't nowhere to pee on Mardi Gras Day. I mean, there is just no. Yeah, I mean, that is live through Mardi Gras. You got to buy something if you want to use the restroom, and the line is, 30 miles long. So, yeah.
I've heard people getting hurricane glasses and walking around and using that.
There's been some pretty inventive people using Depends and stuff like that. But once you start drinking and you have the problem that Brian had, it's like, and the porta potties, forget about it. I mean, just don't even. It's just another thing to hate about Mardi Gras.
The
dry run of that. pun intended.
I think I'll stay away from Mardi Gras. Thanks for the warning.
Yeah. Yeah, be sure. Rent a room. I mean, said that I hate Mardi Gras. I'm from New Orleans, and I won't get into that. But that's one of the main reasons why is you just hold it from the beginning to the end of the parade. But so, I mean, how was your experience with the Dead Files people, the stars?
Steve and I can never pronounce his last name. Schiavi, whatever.
Stevie D.
We're walking down from the Citadel, and all of a sudden one of the crew members rushes us into the bathroom, into the men's bathroom down at the bottom of the dock.
Well, hell, you should have gone.
Bob and I are looking at Steve, and we're like, why are we in here? And he goes, oh, Amy just got on the island. And we're like, yeah.
So all men need to go in the men's room or what?
Well, no, and like I said, we were like, okay, and what does that have to do with anything? And he goes, well, we can't leave the bathroom until she walks by because she can't see me, or else she might pick up on something that I sensed when I was up there, and that would ruin the show.
Oh, my God.
If she's any good, she can pick it up from the men's room. I mean, pass in the men's room, you know, which I think she's good.
I've got a story about that as well.
Clear your mind, Steve. Clear your mind. We'll go right ahead. Go ahead.
So the three of us are on the scow because they apparently don't like to treat their stars very well. The boat was just no. And we're just kind of, you know, heading back to shore, and I'm sitting next to Bob, and Steve is about three rows up on the opposite side of the boat, and he's just ignoring us. And I'm kind of like, okay. And I'm asking Bob, I said, you know, hey, what was Steve like when you, he goes, I don't know, he seemed really nice. He goes, I don't know why he's so quiet right now. He was talkative up there and everything. And, you know, so we're just kind of like, all right. So we were talking among ourselves. We start to pull up to the dock. Steve turns to us and goes, you guys want to go get drunk?
Oh my goodness.
And we're just kind of like, sure. And he actually turned out to be a really nice guy.
Seriously,
he turned out to be a really nice guy. Now, Amy, on the other hand, how good of a psychic can you be if you say, I've never heard of Alcatraz before I got here. I didn't even know it was a prison.
What?
What? Wow. I mean, it's like, yeah.
I don't know. I think she said stuff like that just for shits and giggles. I mean, honestly. I don't think she's a fraud. I just, you know, but because I don't think he would work with a fraud. Unless, well, maybe now what you tell me, though, it's like take the money and look out the side of the boat or whatever.
Yeah, I've heard things that the two don't get along with real well.
No.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is she a diva?
Everything I heard about her and everything, I mean, I'm friends with Todd Wolf. Are you familiar with the Wolf Manor?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what she did... Yeah. To Wolf Manor and some of the other places, I don't think she's. Yeah, I won't. I mean, literally, I won't watch the show. I don't usually talk bad about shows on, you know, in public, but this is one that is just like, yeah, I don't believe her one iota. Well,
Can I ask you? So I'm not familiar with what she did with Wolf Manor. Can you share?
You're talking about Clovis, the house at Clovis, right?
The house in Clovis, correct.
Which is. Yeah.
Well,
way haunted.
It was. Unfortunately, it was torn down.
Oh, I don't even know.
But
another brick in the
wall. Yeah, but yeah, and that place was probably the most haunted place I have ever been to.
Mm-hmm.
It was off the hook all three times we investigated there.
Mm.
But I mean, she just you know, raked Todd over the coal, saying, "How can you?" Be treating ghosts as money makers, and how can you be doing this and how can you be doing that? And she did this all on the show, and it's like, okay, well, wait a minute, Todd didn't charge anybody money to go investigate. He turned it into a haunted house and then had the Clovis High School kids come over and be the scare actors for the haunted house, and he did charge a little bit of money for people to come into the haunted house, but then he turned around and gave all of that money to the Clovis High School. And she just, you know, just totally misunderstood everything that Todd ever did with it.
Wasn't that how he discovered it was haunted? I mean, really?
Yes.
That folks, you're going to hear my dog in the background because she's going crazy. But that things were happening to the kids. And he kind of didn't believe it until afterward when he looked into it. Isn't that, I mean, cause that's a bit unfair. I mean, first he bought it as a haunted house, not knowing that it had real ghosts and she's going to chew him out. That's terrible.
Well, most places take a location fee anyway. And a lot of the places that are out there were on TV and they take location fees. So, I mean, you know, everybody's given something.
Right.
Yeah, but he didn't run it as go ahead. I mean, he didn't run it like as the Myrtles, you know, as a haunted attraction.
No, Todd,
he started Todd out as a haunted house for Halloween.
Oh, okay.
Right. And Todd never charged anybody to come up and investigate. He did a thing called Wolf Manor Live.
Okay.
And so investigators would go up, and while they were investigating, he would film them live as they walked through.
Gotcha.
And even then, he wasn't charging anybody. The only time he charged was when he turned it into a haunted house, And then again, he turned around and gave all of the money to the Clovis High School because the kids were the ones that were being the scare actors. So he gave them all the money. I mean, Todd was, you know, great as far as that goes. He donated the house as a training base for the fire department and the police department without ever charging the city of Clovis for it. I mean, you know,
that's really
Todd
cool.
was not out to make, yeah. And then for her to come in while making money off of a right. show by doing the exact same thing that she was accusing him of is like, mm-hmm. excuse me?
Yeah, that,
you know,
that's
how much money
that's
are
pretty
you making
shabby.
Coming in? Yeah.
A lot, you know, a lot, because it's a very popular show. Why did he tear it down? Why'd they tear it down? I never heard that it was.
Well, he didn't tear it down. The city of Clovis did. Unfortunately, and this is the story I heard.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, okay. the city council and mayor of the city of Clovis were very religious. They did not like the fact that Todd advertised it as a haunted house and that there were ghosts and things like that. So they actually went in, condemned it, gave Todd a certain amount of time to do something with it. Unfortunately, Todd didn't have the money at the time. So then the city of Clovis came in and got the lowest bid. Tore the thing down and then charged Todd for it.
What?
And now it's a vacant lot.
That's terrible.
What? You take his house and then charge him for it?
Yep. Now, it wasn't his house. Oh. I mean, you know, he didn't live there. What Todd had always wanted to do
property.
To refurbish the house. It was his property, yes. He wanted to refurbish the main estate and then add a modern hotel to the back of it.
Okay.
And have it all combined. And he wanted to have it as almost a luxury haunted hotel in Clovis, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which would have been really cool.
Yeah.
And that was always his dream with it. But, you know, over the years, he was trying to come up with the money for it.
He should have gone the route of making it a museum first and go and apply for like a 501c, you know, a nonprofit or whatever, and done that. That they wouldn't have been able to touch it then. But I mean, that's
or
all.
Or historical location if there's history to it.
I'm just amazed that they found any people that actually have religious beliefs in California that could be offended by ghosts, you know. I remembered something the last time that we had you on, and we've been talking about Alcatraz. We've got almost 50 minutes left before the end of the show. I wanted to talk about your Hollywood book. I wanted to get your scoops on, you know, haunted Hollywood. And I think we even mentioned the last time that we were going to get your thoughts on the Elisa Lam and the Cecil Hotel. So I know you have a book about that. What's the title again? I don't have it in front of me.
The title of the book is Hollywood Obscura. However, Elise Lam is not in the book.
Right. I knew it wasn't, but we were going to talk to you about it because even though it wasn't in the book, we were just going to, I was asking you, I think what you thought of, and we just ran out of time. But in general, I'd like to talk about some of the stuff that's in that book and the hotels and, you know, the different stories that you've come up with. But, you know, Elisa Lam and the Cecil, I'd like, just like your opinion of it. What you think of it.
Well, here's what I find funny about the Cecil Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Both Bob and I have gone up there to talk to the people that work there. Unfortunately, we haven't talked to the owners. And I believe the new name of the Cecil is the Stay on Main.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just went through another renovation. But according to every single person we talked to there,
mm-hmm.
not one paranormal event has ever happened there. And, I mean, it was just incredible to us. We're like, wait, are you kidding me? They're all, no, seriously, we have never had even the smallest inkling of a ghost here.
And they had Richard Ramirez and other serial killers and just some cheesy ass people up in there all the time. And No.
Yeah, suicides.
They're holding on that.
Yeah, there were suicides of people jumping out the front of the place and smacking people in the and the sidewalks.
When it was back in the day.
But I mean, literally, we talked to probably 15 or 20 people, and not one of them could say that they've ever had anything happen to them there.
They must be holding.
Yeah, it was mind-boggling.
It's got to be a disclosure.
Yeah, I mean, if there are
I would think that, but the thing is with all of the books we've written, we have never had it to where everybody followed one of those disclosures.
Right.
I mean, our Haunted Universal Studios book, every single story of the paranormal in there came from an employee. And every single one of them said, please don't tell our names because we're not allowed to talk about it.
Gotcha.
And yet everybody did.
Maybe they haven't had anything happen there.
That's impossible. Yeah. I think the law got lit.
I'm just putting it out there. I mean, I think that there's place memory there is incredible, but.
I think it's a serious, I think it's like you'll lose your job or we'll sue you or something like that. Yeah. That's down, you know, because look at it this way, Brian. I mean, they dropped, taking the paranormal and the supernatural out of it, they dropped a serious ball. You know, I mean, that girl, if, as they say, you know, she was nuts and got access to the roof or the, you know, the real life thing.
She did get access because
that's what I'm saying.
There was a back staircase.
I know all of that. What I'm saying is they put them, that exposed them to a lot of liability, taking the supernatural completely out of it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because there was a guy, and his channel on YouTube is called Lorden Arts. Now his name is John Lorden. And he took this, I mean, there's a whole playlist of videos from beginning to end. He was so involved with the case that he actually went to the court hearings with the parents were there and the civil suit and all this other stuff. And he and another guy went to the hotel trying to like follow in her footsteps a little bit. And the friend of his went up to the 14th floor and that damn door was open. The damn door opened with no alarm. Just as, you know, people are saying they had no alarm. The door shouldn't be open. And if it was, they say, well, if it was, it would have triggered an alarm. Well, it still didn't. And this was like a few years after she died. Right. So it's still, you know, so minus the paranormal, I mean, they opened themselves up to a lot just with that death alone. And I don't know what the civil suit ended up being, but I'm sure they settled and it made.
I think they settled with the parents.
A lot of people have
never seen it, but if you've seen, I'm sure you've seen the video, correct?
Yes, in the elevator. Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you watch very closely, the lower left side of the elevator door. You will see a tennis shoe pop into view and then quickly pop back out. There was somebody there.
Okay.
It is a split second, but yes, you can see a tennis shoe or in my brain, it's a tennis shoe, but you can see a shoe dart in and dart right back out.
I'll have to look at it again because I do know that the timer was screwed around with, like the time imprint was like it skips and it goes fast and it skips time. And apparently the one that is widely released, the video is actually speeded up. So because it took place over a longer period of time. So, yeah, you could miss something like a foot getting stuck in if you're busy watching her. Which is the main thing. You know, the other thing that I always say is, where's the rest of the security camera? I mean, she didn't just go in an elevator. She went to and from her room. Where are those? Did they not have video cameras on other floors of the hotel?
The hallway. You
know? Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's so, and supernatural aside, it's a big, you know, mix up. I mean, it's a big problem for whoever owned that hotel, or it ought to have been, you know, that this happened there. And they,
right.
you know, and we've never seen any other, you know, whatever, you know, from this hallway or that hallway or wherever it was. I mean, the story is just so, there's no way that it's not haunted. They are probably, you know, kiboshed. I mean, that's it. They're probably, if you talk about it, anybody talks about it, they're going to get sued. So, you know,
it's possible, but, you know, like I said, without having anybody confirm, you know, I can't say, okay, yeah, it's haunted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just with the amount of people we've talked to, you know, nobody, you know, it's kind of like a Solvang. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Solvang, California, but it has got to be the least haunted town in America.
Mm.
I was up there for 2.5 days talking to every single person that lives there, and no one had a ghost story.
Well,
yeah, it's like
maybe they don't like California. They don't like that location.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's a great location. It's this little Dutch town, and it, I mean, it's gorgeous. But it's like, wow, okay, not a single ghost anywhere. It's like, all right.
Even though there probably is, you know, that, I mean, some people just close ranks and do that kind of stuff because they don't like the reputation, obviously. They even claim that it's religiously offensive, like somebody in California did. I'm like, that. I can't believe it. You're offending our religious sensibilities with this place, Clovis. We're going to tear it down. No, it's terrible. But what are some other things from Hollywood Obscura? We didn't get to talk about that. I know there's more haunted hotels in Hollywood.
Well, Hollywood Obscura actually concentrates on people rather than locations.
Okay.
So it's 11 of the more famous murders and possible murders in Hollywood history that all have a paranormal connection.
Mm.
So it goes from basically Thelma Todd back in the 1930s all the way up through Tupac and Biggie. Mm. And their ghosts and kind of everything in between. So Bugsy Siegel is in the book. Natalie Wood, of course, Marilyn Monroe, George Reeves, John Belushi, which is a very sad tale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so and then my wife's favorite, and actually one of mine, is an old actor by the name of Ramon Navarro. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him.
Vaguely. I've heard the name.
He was Valentino's protege and lover.
Okay.
And he was actually murdered in 1969. And his trial would have made national news if the Manson murders hadn't happened a week after his trial started.
Oh, wow.
Or the trial of his murderer started. But they said he was beaten so badly that even his penis was bruised.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
I don't know. But, you know, the whole tale is just really sad. I mean, you know, he was during the 1930s and 40s, MGM kept trying to get him to marry so he would have a beard. And if you know what a beard is, what's that?
Pete said, yeah, I can.
Yeah, I said, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's what they did to hide their,
right.
Well, they hid behind a marriage. They fixed it up and everything. Right. Yeah. The studio.
He flat out refused. And then in the 1960s, he started to call an escort service, basically. Mm-hmm. And the people, the two guys who ended up killing him, mm-hmm. posed as escorts from the escort service, and they actually weren't. Now, the thing that's so sad about it is the reason they killed him was robbery, because mm-hmm. they had heard him on The Tonight Show talking about refurbishing his house, and the comment he made was, I have $5,000 just in my living room. Now, these idiots thought he meant he had $5,000 hidden in his living room.
Right. And that he would go on TV and say that.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know,
how stupid is that?
Yeah, exactly. These two were absolute morons. And they actually killed him and beat him to death trying to find out where he hid the $5,000 that they thought was in his living room.
Aw, that is terrible.
Oh, that sucks.
That's horrible.
House. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was gonna... Go ahead, Brian.
Well, no, I was going to say his house, he haunted it for years. And they actually did an ABC news special about the haunting.
Okay.
And I believe it was Connie Chung. Are you guys familiar with her?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Married to Maury Povich.
Yeah.
Yeah. Connie Chung was the one that was doing the report, and the ghost scared her and the news crew so badly that they left.
How did they scare them? I mean, did they see it? Or?
It just started moving things around and playing with the equipment and doing stuff that they just couldn't explain.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was probably just having some fun. But people over the years actually bought the house specifically because it was haunted.
Right.
Now, the last people who bought the house didn't want it to be haunted. So they thought, well, let's just tear it down and build a new one. That'll get rid of the ghost. Yeah, well, we all know that doesn't work. It actually made things worse.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah. That's terrible, that poor man dying for that, because they're too stupid. I mean, that's just, you know, I don't know. Yeah,
exactly. God.
What about the John Belushi, though? He was, what was it, the Chateau Marmont? Where was he found? Not the Marquis.
It was a Chateau Marmont, however you want to pronounce it.
I can't believe I remembered that. That's just why I stopped. I'm like, God.
I'm impressed. Cool.
Yeah. Well, it had a reputation, in the 70s, as did the Continental Hyatt House. But
right. Well, believe it or not, it still has a reputation. They are so closed-mouthed about all of their guests, past, present, and even the ones that are coming in the future, that they will not say a word about anything. I went down there to try and get some pictures, and I walked into the garage, because you have to kind of walk through the garage to get to the main area lobby of the hotel, which they wouldn't allow me anywhere near.
Okay.
But as I walked into the garage, I'm looking around. I think the cheapest automobile in there was probably $300,000 or $400,000.
Wow, they were slumming it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were slumming it. It's one of those places where you can't get a whole lot of information.
I think some of that probably contributes to things like people dying. You know what I mean? Like we're going to be so, and you know, it doesn't matter if they talk. They have a really crap reputation, you know, because people die on their property and, you know, apparently can rent rooms and do whatever the hell they want and die there, you know,
don't forget though, you got the boneheads out there that call themselves investigators that will go into a place like that if they were
coming
allowed
soon to Zach Bagans and Ghost Adventures. Unless they did
yeah,
it. They
exactly.
may have done it
well,
already.
You know, so okay, so they get in there and then they wreck the place, you know. That's probably one of the reasons why too.
Well, so what about John Belushi there? Is he haunting that location?
He supposedly haunts the bungalow where he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And the night that he did pass away, he had been doing speedballs. So, he did not like needles. So somebody else had to inject him.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out, and I'm sorry, I'm having a mental block on her name right now. She was a Canadian, and she was actually charged with his murder and did time for it.
Wow.
I don't remember her name either. I don't know who that is.
Smith. Oh, it's going to drive me crazy. You know what? I might have a copy of the book here. It's pretty bad that I have to look in my own book for a name. But anyway, she did spend some time, and then she was Canadian, so she was actually deported after she got out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But are you familiar with Bill Superfoot Wallace? He was a big-time karate guy back in the – well, he's the one that actually found Belushi.
Mm.
Wow. Okay.
Kathy Smith.
Oh, okay. Yeah. How that's like such an easy name to completely forget, Kathy Smith.
Now, here's something interesting about Kathy Smith. Have you ever heard of a Gordon Lightfoot song called Sundown?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was written about Kathy Smith because apparently Gordon Lightfoot was having an affair with Smith. He tried to break it off. She didn't want to break it off, and he actually had to threaten to get a restraining order and everything else. He ended up writing the song Sundown because of that.
I'm creeping around my backstairs. If you ever listen to the song
again,
that's a whole new light.
exactly. But yeah, so there was a story of a couple with a small child who had rented the bungalow, and while they were trying to sleep, they kept hearing their son laughing and talking to somebody in the bathroom.
Oh, Lord.
So they finally got up, tried to figure out, you know, what the heck was going on, and their son turned to them and said, I'm talking to the funny man right there. And he was looking into the mirror. Now, supposedly the mirror is where John Belushi is seen. But apparently Belushi was, you know, having some fun with the kid, and entertaining him and just having a good time with him. And that story has actually been repeated, not just with them, but with other people over the years who stay in that bungalow. Other people have reported that they can't even go near the bathroom, especially the mirror, if they're alone, because they get such a weird feeling about it that they can't even go into the bathroom.
Wow.
So, yeah. But
I mean, but how kind of cool is that, though? This kid getting entertained by John Belushi. I mean,
Well, he
was such a talent, and your kid's getting entertained by the ghost of John Belushi. That's like you couldn't pay for that in life if he was still alive.
Exactly. You know, the sad thing about Belushi is the fact that even though he was such a great talent, he never thought he was.
I know.
And he was always striving to make it big, to do something huge, and never realized that, you know, he was loved by so many people and had so many fans, and it just never entered his head. And that's one of the reasons why he was so driven and probably ended up, you know, doing so many drugs. And it's really kind of a sad tale.
Unfortunately, though, with a lot of the really great comedians, there's a lot of truth in that with a lot of them. I mean, look at the depression that Robin Williams had before he passed.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. With body dysmorphia and all that.
The other guy, not John Candy, but the other guy, Chris Thompson.
Chris Farley.
Farley. I'm sorry. Ian Thompson. Yeah. But I mean, he was the same way, people said. Yeah. He was like that. He just didn't know how popular and, you know, beloved he was.
He was really insecure in person, but when the lights, the cameras came on, he was on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the lights went off, and it's like, cry, clown. You know, there used to be a song way back when called Laugh, Clown, Laugh, and, you know.
Yeah.
So that's terrible. But in a way, that is one of the coolest haunting stories ever. It's like our kid was being entertained by John Belushi. Oh, my God.
Hey, Brian, can I ask you one thing before we get ready, get off? Okay. Sal Mineo, when he was stabbed in the alleyway, is I've heard rumor that people see him there, but I don't know how true that is. I mean, do you know anything about that?
I did a little tiny bit of research on Salmenio, but unfortunately I was running out of words that I was allowed to write, so I kind of put Minio off to the side. But yeah, I had heard that he has been seen in the alley where he was murdered.
Right.
Like I said, unfortunately, I didn't really delve too far into it. It was one of those things where I was doing a preliminary research to see, okay, well, if I need more, let's see, Salmenio. Okay. And so I started to, you know, check to see if there was going to be enough paranormal stuff for it. And that is one of the things I did come across was that he is, and there was one other place that, that he is seen. I cannot remember where it is. I don't remember whether it was the apartment that he was living in or the studio. Cause he was doing, some, music work in a studio, and I don't remember whether it was the studio or his apartment, but there was one other area where his spirit has been seen.
Well, what about George Reeves? That's a tale and a half.
I mean,
they've even made that movie Hollywoodland about it. That was kind of good, but what was your content about that?
Actually, Hollywoodland is actually, I really enjoyed that movie because I actually didn't watch it until after I wrote the George Reeves piece. And the way they break it up between all three theories is I think fantastic.
Yeah.
I do believe that it was most likely accidental suicide. Just because he was another one who was fighting depression. It does seem a little odd, though, that he would commit suicide at that particular time, just because even though he had signed on to do Superman again, and he really did not want to do Superman. He thought it was holding him back, and in a lot of ways it was, because they couldn't get the typecasting out of their heads. And he was actually a very fine actor, but everybody just thought of him as, you know, the tight-wearing Superman. And even though he signed on to continue with the series, he did have other movie prospects that were coming up, and that's what he really always wanted to do was movies. A lot of people don't know that he was actually in Gone with the Wind. They got his character mixed up with another character, the brother that he was playing.
Twins or the Borgara, what was their name? I can't remember. The two that were sitting there with Scarlett in the first scene with her.
You're not going to make me look through my book again.
No, it's okay. Yeah, the Scarlett twins. I'm not sure it was something like Bo and something or other, but never mind.
Bo and Luke.
I think you're right. Yeah, well, no, I think one of them was Bo.
I was right. Fiddle Dee Dee.
Yeah. but I mean, it very well could have been his fiance, Leonor Lemon, that may have killed him. So, you know, no one really knows for sure.
Wasn't he screwing around with a mafia's wife or girlfriend or something?
He was, but yeah. It was the head of MGM.
Okay.
He was having an affair with his wife. However, the husband knew about it and actually approved of it. And George Reeves would actually go over and have breakfast with both of them.
Wow.
So
yeah, and they show that in Hollywoodland. They show like the mogul who was played by Bob Hoskins in the movie, he has a girlfriend too, and they all like, you know, together. And yeah, so everybody's aware of what was going on.
Wow.
Right.
But isn't there a theory that the wife, that the jilted wife, killed him because he was marrying that other girl?
Yes, that is another one of the theories, was that she did not want to lose him as her lover. So there is the fact that, there is the theory that she had her husband kill him because of that. Now, you know, it's a possibility. There is a wide-held belief that a few months before the suicide, that the brakes were cut on his car, and he did get into a major accident, and it was due to his brakes failing. But there is no absolute proof that the brakes were cut. I couldn't find anything in the LAPD records or, any kind of, but there is that theory. And it does seem kind of fishy that everything was happening right after he broke up with, I cannot remember the woman's name. This is what happens when you write too many books.
Don't worry about it.
Hey, you should ask that guy, Brian Clune. He knows stuff.
Yeah, he knows.
Yeah, you know what? I think it was Charles Manson. Yeah, Charles Manson.
No, what was it? What? Susan Denise Adkins. Not Sharon Tate. No, she was some two-bit actress that wanted to be an actress or something, So that is that's a really good movie, Hollywood Land.
Peggy,
it really is.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Affleck actually did pretty good as George Reeves in the movie. So, I mean, if you haven't watched it, y'all, everybody listening, check it out. It's really good.
Yeah, I definitely recommend checking that one out.
Well, in the meantime, in the background, in addition to dogs going crazy and stuff, Bernadine.
I remembered her first name.
Oh, okay.
Tony Mannix.
Tony Mannix. Oh, yeah, that's not Tony an easy Mannix. Name to remember. That's not an easy one to remember. What was I going
to
say?
I used to watch that TV show, Mannix. I should have known.
Oh, my God. That brings back memories. Well, anyway, while we were talking, I'm probably older than you. Bernadine's connection dropped. Okay, so she's not with us. She hasn't been with us. But I want to take you back to Alcatraz here because we have just about a few more minutes here. And she didn't get a chance to ask you this question about Alcatraz. She wanted to know about the D block cell where an inmate was put in there, locked in to, I guess it was a whole cell or, a solitary cell where he was screaming all night about a demon being in there or something being in there with him. And they found him dead the next morning of strangulation. Yeah. That was her question. She wanted to know about that.
Okay. Now this, it's cell 14D, and this is where Bob had his very first paranormal event, experience, whatever you want to call it, when he was 13 years old. Mm. He and this is the reason that we decided to write the book and why, Bob put so much into this book. When he was 13 years old, they had put him in the cell, shut the door, and this is something they did back then. You can't even close the doors now. While he was in the room, the ranger on the outside asked him, "Are you okay?" He said yes. As soon as he said yes, something grabbed his shoulder, whispered in his ear, "You're mine." Mm-hmm. At which point, being 13 years old, he kind of freaked out and wanted out.
Now, not okay.
Yeah.
I need an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do not blame him a bit. This again is why this book is so important to Bob. This is his baby, and it. I can understand why. Mm-hmm. One of the stories is that in the early 1940s, an inmate was put into cell 14D. Mm-hmm. And at some time during the night, he started banging on the door saying that there was somebody in there with him. He thought it was a demon and that it wanted to kill him and that, "Please let me out." Well, the guards ignored him, thinking that he was just trying to figure out a way to get out of the cell because it was one of the worst cells possible. It just had a hole in the floor to pee in, a metal floor to sleep on. You were basically naked with just a pair of shorts. And pitch black.
Oh,
so it was not a place you wanted to be. So they figured, all right, he just wants out, and they ignored him. After a while, he got quiet, and they figured, okay, he finally just went to sleep. Mm-hmm. The next morning, when they opened the cell, they found him dead with strangle marks around his neck.
Mm-hmm.
They pulled him out, sent him to the coroner, and then the following morning, when they pulled all of the other inmates out for their morning prisoner count,
yeah,
they counted one too many prisoners, and were trying to figure out why. When they looked over and saw the prisoner that had been found dead the morning before, standing mm-hmm. in line, and as they watched, he just faded from sight.
Oh wow! Oh,
now, Christ. Now that's the story. And unfortunately, that's all it is. It's just a story. There, the coroner never had a report like that. There is no record of an inmate dying like that. So that just became urban legend. However, over the years, many actual inmates have reported somebody being in there with them. But none of those reports came before Rufus McCain was killed. Rufus McCain and a couple other prisoners had tried to escape from the island. Rufus mm-hmm. McCain panicked, made them turn back around, and they got captured. So about 6 months later, one of the other prisoners knifed McCain and killed him, and it was an agonizing death. But because of the escape, McCain spent like something like 8 months in 14D to the point where he started to go kind of bonkers. And this was before he got killed, of course.
Well, didn't another one of the people that escaped, he was in the hole for like a year and a half, 2 years. The movie Murder in the First was done about it.
Well, actually, Murder in the First is about Rufus McCain.
Is it Rufus McCain? Okay.
I've never actually seen the movie, but if they stated that he was in there for a year and a half, they took some poetic license because that was not legal for them to do.
Okay. All right.
And at the
a month, you know, or 8 months, I mean, might as well be a year and a half, you know? I mean,
No ifs, ands, or buts. I mean, you were basically not allowed to leave the cell. Like I said, there was no toilet in there. It was just a hole in the ground. During the day, they did open the outside door to allow light in, but as soon as it was time to close the door, bang, you were locked in and you were in the dark. You didn't have anybody to talk to. Mm-hmm. And you know, you could very easily go insane. And mm-hmm. it got to the point where the Board of Prisons actually restricted how long a person could be put into one of the, whole cells.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So well, the wide belief now is that it is actually Rufus McCain that is actually haunting the cell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it is most likely a Rufus McCain that is not completely sane.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That's just
and that is
in
probably
there.
What. Right. And that's probably what grabbed Bob on the shoulder.
That's such a.
And that story, that story, the same story that Bob had happened to him, we've actually mm-hmm. heard from about five or six other people that have had the exact same thing happen to them.
Right. So the cell is haunted, and it's probably by Rufus McCain, and an insane Rufus McCain, right?
Right. Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Now, something, if you don't mind, that I'd like to, if we have time, have you guys heard of Abby the Butcher Moldowitz?
No.
No,
I don't think so.
One of the most famous ghosts at Alcatraz. He was originally discovered by Sylvia Brown.
Mm-hmm.
However, he doesn't exist.
I was going to say it was probably bullshit.
Complete and total. And I kept trying to figure out, okay, I got to find this Abby Moldowitz. I got to find the mm-hmm. butcher. I got to find. And so finally I went, you know what, to heck with it. I'm going to check the Alcatraz prisoner records. Yep. Nope. Nobody named Moldowitz ever on the island.
Okay.
the infamous non-existent. Yeah.
but he is literally one of the most famous ghosts on Alcatraz.
Well, let me ask you this. Since
we're almost out of time, Pete. Make it quick.
Okay. Since it's already out there. Do you think people have experienced that because it's already out there saying that it's there?
They're making it happen.
Yeah.
Well, I actually don't think anybody's actually had an experience with Moldowitz other than Sylvia Brown, and I really doubt she did either.
Okay.
Is she still alive?
She passed a few years ago.
I was going to say, if it was recently, we can get in touch with Steve Huff and he can call in because he's got a straight line to the other side. Right? Lorraine had to come and talk to him when she died. It's like, wait, Jesus, I got to go over here and talk to Huff. Okay. All right. But anyway, we are up against the end of the show. So this has been great. And you have an invite back whenever you want. So anyone looking for your book, the Alcatraz book or any of the other ones, where's the best place to find them?
Amazon. Amazon.com. Just put my name or Bob's name in and all the books will come up. Amazon's the cheapest place to get them. But if you want, a little bit quicker, you can probably go into any bookstore to find them. They're traditionally published. So, yeah.
And you'll love every
single one of them.
I'm sure they will. Maybe
Calhoun's. I want that one.
I don't know what's the next one. I don't know what the next one is, but whatever it is, let's hear about it here first, okay? Because you have an invite back whenever you're ready to come, and so does your partner there.
I would love to have Bob on. I'm just going to give you a quick one: Ghosts and Legends of Calico.
Yeah. Okay.
Calico. All right.
All right. Thank you so much, Brian. You have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you. You guys too.
Thanks for being on tonight. We appreciate it.
I'll harass you later, Bob.
Yeah, I know. Oh, Bob. Okay, yeah, harass Bob.
Harass Bob, and I'm going to harass you later.
Oh, my gosh. This is beginning to sound. Okay, never mind.
Hey, don't threaten me with a good time.
don't threaten me. Okay, Brian, you have a great weekend.
I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks. All right.
Bye.
Well, we did lose Bernadine along the way, but she was listening, and I hope she heard the answer to her question, which I'm sure she did. But so that about wraps it up for tonight, Pete. It's just you and me. It's 2 a.m. We're the whatever in the place. Isn't there a song like that? Actually, it's
me and my shadow.
11, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm too big a shadow these days. Anyway, guys, you've been listening to the Supernatural Substation on the United Public Radio Network and iHeartRadio Partner. Anywhere there's archives, you can find the United Public Radio Network. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook. All of us have Facebook pages. Bernadine LeBlanc, Pete Haviland, me, Aline Pisanio. Friend us there, message us there. And the Supernatural Substation has a page on Facebook. Go and like it. There have been some really cool things being posted by Pete the Man, who is taking over that end of the media thing. So go there, like us, and stay tuned for Miss Kathy Bilski. You're going to get High Quantum Leap next, coming up next, and later, 2 a.m., Terminus, Dark Ambient Radio. So have a great weekend, Pete. We're going to say farewell.
Farewell.
Farewell. Talk to you later. Good night, everyone. Until next Friday.